goes against what you've done all your life. Say, for instance, something as simple as putting cold water on after hot water in the shower makes you warmer. I know, you know? Even though you know that, and you have to keep doing it, and keep doing it, and keep doing it, to remember that it's okay, that it's all right, that it does do this, and that it's not really unpleasant to have cold water. And what I'm interested in is that the reconditioning and the non-struggle.
But would you call that a struggle? Would you call repeatedly doing something a struggle? No.
No, but it's a block before you do it in a way. I mean, it's not. Some things still are a struggle. I haven't got to the point of seeing the reconditioning of them.
That is my basic argument against that lovely cliche. It's just a cliche and nothing more. Forgive and forget. Can you forget and forgive? Can you forget something? How do you forget something? So you do not forget it. And without forgetting it, you are developing a new thing. I was rude to you 2 years ago and you remember it. Then I am nice to you now and you remember that. This thing has to go on. For instance, once you have been hurt, probably you are hurt by a cold shower sometime and it wasn't pleasant. That is remembered. You can't forget that. Then someone else, this health specialist, tells you that after a cold, hot shower, a cold shower is good. I'll try. When you say I'll try, you confess that you are not convinced. And this not convinced segment of the mind is still there. It will be there till you die. However much you try to get rid of it, and however much you pretend that it has gone, it is still there. If you don't mind, I'll give you my guru's example, which was shattering at that time. And I cannot say that he was hypocritical at any one stage, but it is beautiful. One has to understand that the day I joined the ashram, two of us went to the ashram together. He cancelled the satsang and called both of us for a briefing. He spoke non-stop for about 2 or 3 hours. It was a beautiful, beautiful night. He was lying on his chair, right next to the Ganges on his veranda. It was all open those days. There was no building. And we were both seated next to him on the floor. It was all open. Moonlight was streaming into the veranda. It was September. And he said, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this. And every few minutes, he used to say, oh, so-and-so, I won't mention names, so-and-so, you know, he is the most important worker here. And he is terribly overworked. He is doing everything. Everything is on his shoulders. We must relieve him of all these donkey work, so that his time and his talent may be available for much greater activity, missionary activity. Now he is doing this, now he is doing that. All that you must take away and relieve him and free his time and his energies for something better. During that 2 hour period, he gave us to understand that this Swami is God Almighty. Without him, the ashram wouldn't exist for 1/15th of a second. Everything would collapse. He is the only one that is supporting the entire ashram. He is the only one that is doing everything. And you must help him. Don't forget me, but you must go and help him. Right? This is the briefing. And incidentally, it is when we started doing that, Later on, we were blamed for it, and he thought we were going to take over. That is natural. I could understand that. Right. It's natural, and I could understand that. Then, this was September 3rd or 4th, 1945. September 1948, hardly 3 years afterwards, the tables had turned. And this Swami began to neglect his work and etc. etc. and sort of defying Swami Sivananda, because he wanted to go away with a tantric man to learn some tantra and acquire some powers of blessing people and cursing people, curing people of their headaches and things like that. Somebody had come from South India and he wanted to go away with him, and that man had given him some initiation. So whenever Swami Sivananda wanted him, they said he is doing puja, he is doing japa, he is meditating, not available. Actually, when a very important worker like this suddenly turns turtle, it's difficult for the head of an organization to function. So first Swamiji said, he was some sort of an official in the organization. They take away this thing. Let him, if he wants to do puja and so on, let him do it. But he cannot be a secretary or treasurer or something like that, and then hide himself all the time. So take all his power and responsibility and let him do what he wants to do. But he was not prepared to do that. And there was a fight. Swamiji asking him to give up all this, all his work and responsibility and power and position and so on. He's saying, no, I'm going to. One day, Swami Sivananda and I were walking up the hill along the way that we usually take, not the steps, the other way. The steps were not there in those days. And we were alone. This is somewhere the beginning of September. Swamiji was going to the temple or something, and I was also accompanying him. And I sort of said very gently, he said, what happened? What happened to him? I said to Swamiji, I think, it looks as though he is not mentally all right. But he is saying all sorts of funny things about you, about the Guru. Not because he is hostile, but I think there's something wrong with his brain. Shot at me and was very furious. He said, you are his lawyer, advocate? You are pleading for him? I said, my God, what have I done now? Hey, froze. It's not like that. Now, listen very carefully. This is 1948. And that Swami joined the ashram, joined Gurudev, 1937, I think. No. 48 minus 14? 34, 35. He had joined Swami Sivananda in 1934 or 35. And it seems on the first or second day after joining Swami Sivananda, it seems he insulted Swami Sivananda. He must have been a very young man at that time. So I don't care for this Swami Sivananda. Who is he to tell me like this? Swamiji told me this in 1948. 2 days after he came, he insulted me. And was rude. I know Swami Sivananda, who is he to tell me like this? I won't do it. I won't do what he said, ask me to do. That happened in 1934 or 35. And Swami Sivananda remembered this. He had not forgotten. And 1945, he is prepared to praise him to the skies without mentioning a word, without even giving a vague hint that this is the type of person. That is not forgotten, it comes back. 3 years later, it comes back. So, what is called reconditioning is not easy. Now, in the Yoga Sutras also, we have a very beautiful sutra. What is memory? Memory is the non-dropping of an experience, non-abandonment of an experience. I'm sure you think you understand what that means. I don't.
I think it's beautifully put. I'm lovely words, non-abandonment.
Non-abandonment of what was experienced. Now if you look at this mechanism, the dynamics of experience and memory, you see one thing very clearly. In the experience of a memory is real, is not really abandoned. What happens really is the experience is integrated.
Mm-hmm. Into what? Into the moment?
Into you.
Into me.
Into you.
Memory is me.
Right?
Integration.
You are nothing. I mean, I don't know. Others may or may not agree. According to me, there is no me except the memory. Pull out all the memories that I have. What will I be? So, watch very carefully how this thing works. I have had some experience, and that experience, when it. That experience can have two distinct destinations. One, it is immediately integrated. Two, it sits there like a undigested potato.
Does it ever?
Yeah, sure. Hey, they are the experiences you recall later.
Pain and the pleasure.
The pain and the pleasure. And in their case, the funniest part is, those experiences which have not been thus integrated are not operative. They are very safe. This is a psychologist's theory also.
They're not digested, they never become part of you.
They have not become. I mean, I wouldn't say they would never. Now, one step back and one step forward again. One step back. You had an experience. Why was it not digested? Why was it not assimilated? For a very simple reason, you did not receive it. You treated it as foreign matter. Or as the cancer research scientists might tell you, as non-self. Anything that is self is assimilated. Anything that is non-self is rejected by the body, even by the body. So that if there is a graft, if the body can be bluffed that it is yourself, it takes it. If it is non-self, it's thrown away. So, an experience is not assimilated, because you don't want it. Doesn't matter whether it is pleasure or pain. That's strange. It's very strange. But one has to understand this. Millions of experiences you and I pass through every day, they are assimilated, like this, just like that, so that you don't even remember them. They are not forgotten. God forbid. They are not forgotten, they are not even abandoned in that sense. Abandoned only in the sense that those experiences are assimilated. Some strong experiences are not assimilated. Pain and pleasure. Pleasure is not assimilated because you still want to lick it. You realize if you become one with it, something is gone. So you don't, correct? You don't want to become one with it. So you fight it and keep it there. Remember it. It's strange, funny, isn't it? And in the same way, pain. You don't want to become one with it. You don't want to assimilate it. And therefore, you keep it away. And a reason why painful experiences are even more vividly recalled and remembered and so on than pleasurable experiences. Pleasurable experiences are, I would still like to keep you there and experience you, enjoy you, not become one with you, not be dissolved into you, keep you there and enjoy you. So that you are not self. See the point? And, well, but when there is an opportunity of an intense experience where, well, maybe for a little while I forget myself and become one with you, I don't mind it occasionally, but not with pain. Pain, I want to keep it there, keep it there, keep it there, and not accept it as mine, as myself. And therefore that is never forgotten. And ever new, pain is ever new. It's always not self. Pleasure, if you think of pleasure as a rainbow spectrum, at one point you are prepared to blend. Why? The Vedantin might come and tell you that you are the nature of bliss, and therefore when this pleasure reaches that climax when you are blissful, you accept it as self. Am I making myself clear? Till then I am still
remembering,
not keeping it not as not self. Not self is the word. Keeping it as not self and keeping it away from me. At one point where the climax is reached, that climax is neither in the other person nor in me, but it is something transcendent. That is the self. The climax is the self. So when the climax is reached, I am prepared to let myself go. Because that is the self. And therefore I cannot remember it.
That's so surprising. So you keep going through that point to forget again.
Sorry.
But the interesting ones too are now then myself, okay? The integration and non-integration, but that which is assimilated. What is assimilated? That which is hardly tasting neither of quite pain or pleasure, which makes up what I am.
No. What is assimilated is assimilated. You can never...
You can't even discuss it.
It's impossible to discuss it. That is my difference with the psychologists. Whereas they say, up to that point I agree with them, that my childhood experiences have become totally integrated into what I am. Most of those experiences are even beyond recall. That is, I don't even remember. And this fellow says that your present idiosyncrasies arise from something there. I say, sorry, too bad. It is not possible to deal with them now. It is possible to deal with only these remembered experiences, which are unassimilated ones.
So the actual nature of what's pleasurable to you now to chew over and what's painful to you does change, or in the circumstances of pleasure and pain do change. You're saying that, in fact, you know, the actual memories...
Memories don't change.
They're changed.
Memories don't change. The integrated thing may go undergo change. Be careful here. Be very careful here. The integrated thing will undergo change.
Well, sure.
So,
right.
So as long as this memory continues, there is no change.
So in fact, it's all still sitting there. All the whole thing is not what gives it no energy. In fact,
right.
It's not interesting.
Right. When it is integrated, then it becomes you. Then you enjoy a cold shower or a hot shower.
But it's still always there, just like 18 years ago.
Because it has not been integrated. It is still a concept. It is still a concept. It is not integrated. That experience, you might remember, you may not remember, of a shocking shower is still there, unassimilated, saying, no, this is not myself, sorry, I don't want it. What is sweetly integrated into the personality, that can change. That has to change, naturally. Because as a young girl, you were doing something, and then suddenly you matured into a young woman, there is a change, and that change brought about a few other changes, opened yourself to a few other changes. And as you grew up, integration, and something else, the horizon widens, and all sorts of things can take place. But only the integrated personality, integrated memories, function as you, because only that is you. The other memories are undigested. They are sitting there. Sometimes they quietly slip into you. When they say into the subconscious, it really means into the integration stage. I refuse to believe that in the subconscious there is undigested food. To me, that doesn't make sense. In the subconscious, there is no undigested memory. When it goes into the subconscious, it is chewed up. From there it works, sure it works. I accept that from the subconscious, these things influence our lives. But they are not sitting there as cancer for you to exercise. They have become completely you. Otherwise, you behave like a funny... I shouldn't say funny. Probably, he's a very great... worshipped as God Almighty. One Swami in India, who had some miraculous powers and so on, is worshipped even today as a God. First, he also agreed with the Bible and some of the scriptures that women, the female, is the downfall of the male. And as long as you avoid the female, you'll be all right. That's how he started, he was a young man. And in India, this is a big thing. If he goes to India now, especially the north and, you know, the holy areas, and keeps his eyes there, and if you go and talk to him, he turns his face away and says, "Yes, sorry, I won't talk to you. Call your brother." If he does that for 10 days, his shares go up. Skyrocketing. It's greatly valued there. Right. And No. You don't have to be worried about me. He's quietly pushed.
Sorry, I can't get that on tape.
And then he had an enormous following and so on. There were, among his followers, there were quite a number of women. Now, so there's a problem. He said, "Now, I am going to purify myself so completely and thoroughly that nothing matters anymore." Now, how do we get that? He said, "This body is born of male and female, and I am going to pull out from this body all the female element completely, so that I am going to be a complete 100.5% male."
No,
he said no. I quite realized it. No, he believed in the other theory, that it is the woman in you that attracts the woman, that makes you crave for the woman. It is the female element in you that is accepted as valid. And so he said, "I'm going to get rid of..." So that even in your consciousness there is nothing called female. It's all male. Full. Completely. Totally. But how do you do that? Is it possible for you, born of male and female combination, with every cell of your body being a composite structure of male-female organism, how do you remove this? He went on a long fast, I believe, about 40 days or so. And then one fine morning, declared that I am now only male. That is, my whole consciousness is just male. And I have no thought of a female at all. So even if you come and dance there, it's still a male. Because I can't think of a thing called female. Can you do that? That is what these psychologists are trying to do. Whatever experience I have had till today has been completely integrated into every cell of my being or mind. How do you single one out? If you are able to single that out, I would say that is not integrated memory. Ill-digested, undigested stuff. In which case I should really be able to remember that.
Pretty complex.
Funny. Exactly, you are nearly same experience I had. I used to love butter as a young boy. Not this type of butter, you know, the fresh butter. And you churn it, take it out, and this is sweet and very beautiful it was. It used to be. And I used to love it. And when I joined the ashram in 45, the food didn't agree with me, something happened. So I had violent digestive problem and constipation and all that. I used to do puja in the temple, evening puja in the temple. And there was a Swami who also had some sort of, you know, nature cure thing, systems and so on. And I was explaining to him that this was my problem. He said, you got the medicine in your own hands and you are weeping for a cure? I asked him, what is the medicine? They used to send a little bit of curd and a little bit of butter for offering to Krishna at 10 o'clock before closing the temple. I never used to consume it. I used to send it down to where it came from. He said, don't you get this butter every night? I said, yes, I send it back. That is your medicine. I'll tell the authorities down below. You keep the butter and send the rest of it back. All right. Then what do you want me to do? Very simple. Morning. This thing. The next morning, there is a little fireplace near the temple. I put a glass, a vessel, and some water there. I had preserved this butter, floated it on it. I looked at it, yo! It was exactly like castor oil which I hit. Anyhow, but he had said so, and I was not very, very well. I needed some relief. So I started drinking it. The thing smelt like castor oil, tasted like castor oil, luckily acted like castor oil. That was the only good thing that it did. That's all. Only once I could take it, not the second day. I tell myself 15 times, no, no, it is not castor oil, it is... No. Block. For years I couldn't take even butter. Right. According to psychologists, you analyze yourself and you go to the root. I know the root. I saw this and I remembered my childhood abhorrence for castor oil. These two are there. And you rationalize it and you get out of it. It doesn't go. How do you feel it again? How do you feel it again?
I don't know.
Imagination. Mere imagination. Mere imagination. That is introducing one more element into your into the complex structure. It's merely introducing one more element in this, hoping that somewhere something would work, somewhere something would work for a few days, sure. But it will come back again. Because that is strongly there and it has not been assimilated. That experience which rebels against the present, whatever it is sitting there strongly, unassimilated, not self. Rejecting it. How do you deal with that? Not by sort of juggling hypnotherapy and all that. Hypnotherapy may work again for a month or two till you collect your fees and go away. Here, the use of willpower may be of some help. Knowing that this is how it was formed, right? This rejection of butter arose like this, right? I am going to eat it. I remember the castor oil incident. I remember the butter incident. Nothing has gone. And while I am taking this, I can see this rejection. The memory, undigested memory, jumping up and down. I am going to cut another groove that I can do. Just like Swami Shivananda did. I remember this man's misbehavior, but he has been working very well and all that. He's been a hard worker and a very responsible person. The new groove has been cut. Cut it a little more. See how it goes. But don't bluff yourself that has gone. It has not gone. Now you can tell yourself, it is nice to have a cold shower after a hot bath, and do it. Do it once, do it twice, do it three or four times. Then if you feel it's pleasant, the previous memory is still there and a new memory is forming. They can both live side by side. That's all that is possible. Not reconditioning.
Not wiping out.
If one of these is self, it's immediately assimilated, it's forgotten. Then you will go on doing what you are doing. Only remember, in those days I used to hate it. Not clear? Give us an incident. Something which you hated doing, you tried. Aye, it's good. It's very nice. And then you suddenly slip into it, like duck taking to water. And the new habit becomes easy. There's no difficulty at all. So that it is not even remembered. You don't even remember how you got into this business. And the old one is vaguely remembered. I used to hate this once upon a time, but now I like it. This is when the second habit becomes self and quickly assimilated. Therefore, you don't even remember it. The past one is remembered. Unless something like that happens, there's no reconditioning. That which is remembered is not part of your conditioning at all. When it gets into the conditioned stage, it's assimilated. You don't even know where it is. That is the problem. The problem is that we are so thoroughly conditioned by the experiences, conditioned meaning assimilated, conditioned meaning digested, conditioned meaning the me, the memory forming the me, no longer sitting there for you to deal with. The dealer becomes the memory. Oh, how do you deal with that? The dealer becomes the memory. That's where God's grace or Guru's grace, something is like that. He can sort of shake it up and cut a new groove. Faith is good. Faith. Then a little bit of willpower. You see, having used the glasses, now it looks strange.